Morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, the 5th of July. Morning, Marcus. What have you got for us overnight?
Good morning, Ben. I have Wall Street closed overnight, as everyone knows. I would just point out, though, the Dow futures at this point are up 100 points, so we might get a better session tonight. Futures this morning were up one, but yesterday's session were up 73, so we've probably exhausted ourselves a little bit. I think I saw the market unchanged first thing this morning. Oil price, bit of a feature overnight, up 1.7%, 2%, depending on which one you look at. And Norway has got some strikes, which will knock significant production out. Don't know how long they'll go on for. And OPEC production was down. And then you had JP Morgan yesterday with its comments that if the worst case scenario happens, in other words, Russia starts to get back at sanctions by cutting production, you could see the oil price at $190 or $380. And it's currently $110. So oil a feature and energy, one of the few sectors performing in Europe overnight. Otherwise, the iron ore price looking pretty shabby, down 4.6% yesterday and I think 11% the day before. And this, I am assuming from the newswires I've read, it's to do with Chinese steel output cuts. Also some suggestion, of course, a while ago that the Chinese were going to put a body together to try and combat high prices from Australia. We will see. Europe was up 0.54% overnight, so reasonable tone to things. There are a number of stocks. I think the Coppo reports put out a list of tax loss stocks having a bounce, which is just a notable feature over the past few days, that some of the stocks that have been hardest hit are having a relief rally. Amongst the bigger ones there that I note were Nick Scali, Domino's, ARB, might have a touch of quality to them. We've got a lot coming up. We've got the RBA today, 50 basis points expected after the surprise 50 basis points last month. That will take us from 0.85% to 1.35%, with talk of 2.35% by the end of the year and 2.85% at the next year. We'll see. FOMC minutes on Thursday morning our time. US jobs numbers on Friday. The big one is the US CPI number next week on Wednesday. And then the US results season starts next Thursday. And that's about that.
Great. Thank you, Marcus. Tom, what's happening locally?
Not much, Ben. The market treading water ahead of the RBA decision at 2:30. A 50 basis point hike is expected. Energy and tech names in positive territory. Consumer staples and financials are the worst performers. Big four banks all down about 1%. And the CBA may take a $2 billion hit from the write-down of Klarna, that buy now, pay later offering invested in. And Bubs looking to raise $63 million to fund US growth plans. They firmed for your guidance. And Regis Resources announced record gold production.
That Bubs thing is just typical, isn't it? They make a massive fuss about a couple of jumbo jets going over full of formula, and then you get hit with what? $63 million capital raising. It's called feeding the ducks whilst they're quacking and then smacking them on the head when they put their heads up. Anyway, well done, Bubs.
I say that Commonwealth Bank headline is not great for Commonwealth Bank shareholders, but it might make shareholders of Zip or what is now Square feel a little bit better that their $5,000 holding might be down 80%, but at least they didn't burn $2 billion on it.
Okay. And what's CBA done today?
They're all down about 1%.
Yeah, it's down 0.7%, so no major damage.
Thank you, Tom. Layton, what have you got from the brokers?
Thank you, Ben. Just looking at Domino's this morning, it's DMP, and it's a similar sort of story to what Tom was talking about with Collins Food recently, with that inflation sort of hedge with the cheap food offering, I guess. And UBS has DMP as a buy this morning, and they say that Domino's has implemented a 6% delivery service fee to offset cost pressures. UBS anticipates food inflation for Domino's will be in the mid to high single digits, but it remains positive on Domino's and says it is better positioned to manage inflationary pressures than some of its peers. And so I was looking at all of the broker comments this morning. Most of them are bullish. There's a couple of buy recommendations: accumulate, add, overweight. And the average target price is $92.44, which implies around a 33.5% upside. And also having a look at the chart, the share price is down around 58% from its high in September last year. It's been in a pretty nasty downtrend since then, but it has recently bounced off around the bottom of its trading range a couple of weeks ago, and it looks like it's up near the top of its trading range now, so it'll be interesting to see where it heads.
Actually, if you look at the chart, it's down from $164 and has just triggered a bunch of buy signals. In the short term, it's back up to $7, and it is one of the stocks that seems to have seen a heck of a lot of tax loss selling, so a bit of a relief rally going on and buy signal.
Very nice. Thank you, Layton. Henry, what have you got for us?
Thanks, Ben. Yes, I've been watching Bubs for an entry there for a bit of a holding in the small cap. So this has come at a good time for me because I missed out yesterday in buying it. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing how the market reacts to this 52 cent placement and entitlement issue. It's a 1 for 10.46. So that that is interesting. The other interesting thing is the gold sector at the moment. I have to say, I haven't written on this, but it's certainly proving to be quite resilient, I guess, in some respects, because we are starting to see some M&A activity. We're seeing Genesis, which is run by the ex-Saracen MD, who is one of the good guys, I guess, in the gold mining circles. He's putting the band back together in some senses. He's making a bid for Dacian Gold. It's a script bid, and there are a bit of consolidation going on in the sector at the moment after the problems they've had. Most of these guys are stuffed full of cash, considering the gold price has been pretty elevated in Aussie dollar terms, and they have had a pretty good run. So they've got big cash piles, and they are using that now, and there should be some consolidation continuing in the sector. So that's going to be interesting. Apart from that, just writing today on the lithium sector yet again, which is a bit dull at the moment, but there were some government numbers out yesterday from one of their reports on the quarterly resources, a report talking about their assumptions for lithium pricing production and where Australia stands in that story as well. So that is a positive still for the sector. And on that iron ore fall, we're also seeing moves in Guinea, where Rio has a project, the Simantu project, and the Guinean government has put the whole thing on hold because they can't agree on terms, JVs. Now, Simantu was one of the big promises for the Chinese. Don't forget, the Chinese do own part of Rio. The Chinese getting that iron ore out of Australia and into diversifying it. So if there's more problems with Simantu, that could perk up the iron ore price a little bit. We are seeing Dalian futures better in iron ore, not by a huge amount, but by a smidge. And interestingly, yesterday as well, I recorded a 50-minute podcast with a gentleman from Platinum Asset Management, which was massively interesting and possibly one of the most interesting, I guess, in some respects, podcast I have done for many a long moon. Unfortunately, platform was crap, let down, and didn't record his side of the conversation. So all you've got is the noddies from me saying, yeah, really, great, fine. So I'm trying to get that retrieved. Otherwise, I will try and summarize his thoughts that I was writing down as I was going along. Hopefully, we'll get it back. Otherwise, it will be an article tomorrow on his thoughts on the market, which weren't very good at all.
Fingers crossed there, Henry. Thanks for that.
Yeah, a little hope, Ben.
Just tell us it was no good, please. I don't like hearing this. Well, it's the best podcast you've ever done, but it's missing.
Unfortunately, these people have stuffed around with the platform and updated it to make it look nice and shiny and new, and it's absolute rubbish. It's very complicated.
Fingers crossed technology comes through. Thank you for that, Henry. We've got a couple of fresh ideas today. Tom, you've got one for us.
Thank you, Ben. My fresh idea today is CSL. Everyone's familiar with this company, but they had a promising collection data for June. Volumes are now mostly in line with pre-COVID levels, and foot traffic in the US and its US plasma centers is returning as well. A 5% increase in plasma collections over a 6-month period can translate into a 2% earnings upgrade. So when you see plasma collections improving, momentum improving, that's really important for earnings and potential earnings upgrades. Another tailwind for the business is that slowing economic growth, especially in the US, and collection volumes are actually inversely correlated, given the attraction of incentive payments for blood donations. So when the economy is slowing down, you need some money. Donation seems a bit more attractive because you get some money for it. The share price up 30% from its February low, starting to trend up, heading into results on August 16th. So one to look at, Ben.
Very nice. Thank you, Tom.
And the average broker target price on that is 14% above current share.
Very nice. And I've got a couple of quick ideas in there as well. I've got Suncorp, which Marcus has been talking about in the office a little bit recently, as an income stock that provides some reliable income but does not have a whole lot of growth. Over the last 12 months, they're down just under 1%, which is pretty good in comparison to the 9% or so that the ASX 200 is down. But a strong ROE, sitting on a reasonable PE of 16.8 times, set to come down over the next couple of years. And most importantly, sitting on a 7.2% gross yield, which includes franking, of course. And they haven't missed a dividend payment in the 20 years of records kept on their website. Obviously, it came down a little bit during COVID and there's been some variability in the amounts, but they've paid an interim and a final dividend each year for the last 20 years, which is reliable, I guess you could say. The brokers generally like it. Average target price is 23% above the current price. All of them except Morgan Stanley have some version positive or buy recommendation. Morgan Stanley's concerns stem from the increase in extreme weather events that we're seeing in Australia and the potential to the need for a higher catastrophe budget for Suncorp. But the good news is that yesterday they provided an update, Suncorp that is, confirming that the FY22 natural hazard costs were in line with guidance and the expected costs of the latest extreme weather events hitting New South Wales are around $1.1 billion, which is also in line with previous guidance and the expectations around the La Nina weather pattern that we are currently sitting through. So it's not without risks, but it does present a reliable source of income, albeit without all that much growth. It's held in our dividend portfolio. It's up 20% in there. It does counter a little bit the line that I've just said a few times, but perhaps some fortunate timing there. Over the long term, it does tend to go sideways, but reliable dividend is what's there for. It's an income stock. And the other stock I've just got a quick look at is one Henry's been talking about, mentioning it on the podcast yesterday, Johns Lyng Group, and fell 46% top bottom in just under 2 months. It's up almost 20% since in the last 3 weeks as parts of New South Wales and Queensland deal with that unfortunate latest bout of extreme weather. They have a lot of contracts with insurers. They were appointed by the New South Wales government to lead the recovery response flood catastrophe February, March. And we know that there is a unfortunate increasing trend, climate change and extreme weather events in Australia. So John are geared into the restoration efforts around that. At the start of June, they upgraded their FY22 EBITDA guidance by a bit over 5%, which represented a 58% rise from the year prior. They are a growth company. They're geared into the trend. They've been sold off, probably fed a little bit into the tax loss selling at the end of the year, as Marcus was talking about just before, but they are geared into that trend and they will be a major beneficiary of the restoration that is required each time we suffer an extreme event. So worth a look there. That's our fresh ideas. Marcus, what have you got for strategy?
A couple of quick things. I noticed, I'm just having a look while I was talking there, every broker has got a buy recommendation on CSL, which is a bit odd because prior to this correction, almost every broker always had a hold or sell because it was on a high PE. Now they're all buyers with target prices above the current share price. And on the Johns Lyng Group, it might put people off to hear the share price up 20%, but after the sort of correction we've had, it's still down almost 40% from the top, even though it's had a 20% bounce. It's that whole thing. If it drops a lot, what looks like a big bounce actually doesn't make much difference in terms of how far it's come down. Not that it's going to return to the highs. Right. I have done strategy today very quickly, which is exactly the same as it was yesterday, which is sitting in cash. The recent sort of year-end bounce, which has put a little bit of a floor under markets, is not really a change of momentum or trend at this point, certainly not technically. And I don't think we've seen any macro backdrop changes that would justify some sort of change of attitude towards the market. Still got lots of hurdles ahead and lots of signpost events coming up, US CPI, FOMC minutes, RBA meeting, US results season, lots of things coming up, and maybe those will turn things around. But just a small rally in itself or small stabilization doesn't make a difference. So still in cash in our strategy portfolio, which is based on ETFs. So with that in mind, I've taken the time to write about quality investing. We have to do 40 CPD or compulsory professional development points each year. And as usual, I did most of them in the last month of the year. And one of the subjects that caught me was a piece of Kaplan research on quality investing. As you probably know, there is a quality ETF in Australia now. There is only one that looks at Australian stocks or tries to corral quality Australian stocks. And that's the BetaShares Australian Quality ETF. Code is AQLT. And that has been underperforming ever since it started. It only started back in April. And if you look for quality investments elsewhere, there are MSCI indices based on quality. And there are only, I think we could find, 4 quality ETFs, none of which are over Australia except for AQLT. The Australian market doesn't really have the depth to do a proper quality assessment or to have a robust index. So there's no MSCI quality index over Australia. But there are a couple overseas listed on the US market, which is QUAL, which is the VanEck International Quality ETF, the QLTY, which is BetaShares Global Quality Leaders ETF, and a couple of others as well, one in India, which I doubt any would be buying. But there is a bit of exposure to quality. Today, what I've done is look at how do they pick their stocks? So what is a quality stock? And I'm not going to run through it all, but the basic idea is that quality stocks are based on profitability, growth, and safety, safety being an important part. And the ratios that you would use to identify quality stocks are fairly standard. You'll see them in the article, but it's to do with profitability, earnings stability and momentum, revenue stability and momentum, margin stability and momentum, cash generation, and a stable capital structure, which means it's low debt, safe, low risk of bankruptcy and that sort of. And so the MSCI indices have tried to pull out quality stocks. And you would think a quality index would perform really well when the market fell over. And if you look at the main MSCI USA quality factor ETF from iShares, it's been destroyed in the last year as the market fell over, because I don't think in the US they have any choice but to hold a whole load of big tech stocks as their quality stocks. The point being that, and the conclusion is, quality doesn't seem to work as a factor to base an ETF on. I can see the ETF people saying, everyone wants quality. We can sell billions of these. opportunities if we market quality, use Buffett and Warren as our keywords, and you're going to attract money. And I think that's what's driven it. But the reality is so far that it still requires excellent timing to get quality right relative to the rest of the market. And in the last year or so, it's been pretty disastrous. So it doesn't really appear to work well enough to be a reliable filter for stocks. And there is a lot of debate about what might make a quality factor. Everything is timing. When the markets turn around, no doubt the Qual ETF, which has a lot of the big tech stocks in it in the US, is going to outperform. But truth of the matter is, if you can time that and time the bottom of the market, you're going to make a heck of a lot more money in something more geared to recovery, like one tech stock, rather than buying an index of what looks like quality stocks. So the bottom line is, this article about quality is not very helpful in the end. So well done anybody who reads it, but it does tell you how people pick out quality stocks, and that might be of use to you if you're filtering stocks for your own portfolio based on safety, profitability, and stability and growth in earnings and dividends and that sort of stuff. So quality factors are in there, but it doesn't seem to be working as an index or an ETF, mate. And that's it.
Very nice. Thank you, Marcus. As promised, our question of the day today was, bring to the floor a stock market limerick. We've all prepared one. There's no guarantees they're going to be any good, but we shall see. Layden, could please kick off?
All right. I just really wanted to get this last line on. That's why I made it. The stock market is so volatile. It's been this way for quite a while. But one thing you cannot deny is buy low, sell high.
Thank you, Layton.
Very good.
Left us stunned.
Speechless. That's,
well done, Layton.
Are you, Marcus, are you going to be the judging panel here?
Yeah. Okay. I'm out of five. I'm giving that only a 2, I'm afraid.
Tom?
It seems like equity investments are dropping like flies, with monetary policy about to reach the skies. The central banks don't know which way is up, and Bitcoin is about as useful as a hole in a teacup.
That's a 1.
Brutal. Henry?
There's a few on Facebook I put on my thing today, so I'll share a couple of those before I do mine. Once was a strong Aussie market. On inflation and war, it did cark it. A rising of rates and growth dissipates. The problem for wealth, where to park it? And there was, my screen went red. I think it's the Fed. And now my stocks are declining. No need for tears. It's only the years. Till then, I'll reach for the med. It doesn't quite scan. There was a 4 or 5 on Facebook. As far as mine goes, there was a young man in the markets who invested his money and he parked it. The market went bang. His dreams went twang. And his hope now all rests in high price target.
Too
market today. I like it. I like it.
Come on, Benny. You do better.
I'll give mine. I like to, before I say mine, say mine's a bit of a forecast of what I hope will happen rather than what has happened. Has also got a bit of a Christmas carol. I'm not sure why that happened. Jerome put rates up, the market fell down. There was blood on the floor, bears came to town. Then inflation peaked and the wallets came out, thus putting an end to the stock market rout.
Oh, I like that one. That's not bad. You're getting 3.5 there. Oh,
beautiful. And what have you got for us, Marcus?
I wrote one for Waleed on the radio. I didn't quite get the memo about it being about the market, but here's mine for Waleed on the radio, because he's kicked this whole thing off. There was a young man called Waleed. In the media, he'd always succeed, but one day on the box, he didn't wear socks, and downhill, his career did proceed. I'll give that a 5.
Thank you for
it's perfect scanning for a limerick, which is unlike some of the others. I think the next challenge is a haiku.
Yeah, that would be. Maybe next week we'll do a haiku.
I suggested to Waleed that we do a sonnet, but he didn't seem to like that.
It's there trended. Very nice. Thanks, guys. See you
tomorrow. Well, thank you, Henry.